Turn me around, turn me around, turn me around, ain't gonna let nobody turn me around. I'm gonna keep on a walking, keep on a talking, gonna build a brand new world. So I first heard that song in the 1970s on an album by Joan Baez, singing songs of protest from the 60s. Of course, there were a few extra verses that she sang, which include, "Ain't gonna let that stinking Kissinger turn me around," and other things like that. I don't know what Paul's musical tastes might have been, but if he were a child of the 60s, I suspect that might well have been his theme song. Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around. We first, a few weeks ago, looked at Paul in Acts 9. That's where Paul kind of gets introduced to us. He's on the road to Damascus and gets blinded on the road. In the next seven chapters, Mimi was reading for us today from chapter 16, we begin to see Paul's journey. And it is an amazing journey that Paul goes through in just those seven chapters, and there's more to come. In Damascus, when he finally gets his eyesight back and finally has his conversion moment, he gets up and starts preaching. It's what we would expect from Paul. He gets up and starts preaching, and guess what? It doesn't go over really well. It goes over so poorly that the people that are with him have to try and help him escape by lowering him in a basket through a hole in the wall so he can get out of town. He finds his way from there, Damascus, back to Jerusalem. When he gets to Jerusalem, all excited to meet the other disciples and the apostles, he discovers that they are all afraid of him. Why not? He's the one who's been trying to put them all in jail and get them all killed. So they're afraid of him, and they sort of send him on his way. Paul goes on his way and begins the first of many missionary journeys. He heads to Caesarea, to Tarsus, to Antioch, to Seleucia, to Cyprus, to Perga, to Iconium, to Lystra, to Derbe, and back to Antioch. And this is just three chapters or so. He is on his way doing all these things and then gets summoned back to Jerusalem, where he gets his wrist slapped by the disciples and the apostles that are there, saying, "What is this that you were preaching in which you were inviting all those Gentiles into the faith that is ours?" And so they have their little thing, and he gets into a fight with his right-hand person, Barnabas, a fight so bad that they can no longer go out together in spreading the word. And even in the midst of all of that, getting his wrist slapped, getting in a fight with his friend, he organizes the first Christian relief effort that we know of in history. During the famine of Claudius, he goes around collecting money from one church to another to make sure that all people can survive the famine. And then he goes off again. And on a second journey, going off again, going to Samaria, to Phoenicia, to Syria, to Cilicia, to Phrygia, to Galatia, and finally to Philippi, where we find him. A lot has happened in just seven chapters in the life of Paul, and he has gone through the gamut of human reactions, from affection to dislike, from affirmation to persecution, and yet he endures. Ain't gonna let persecution turn me around, turn me around. Turn me around, ain't gonna let persecution turn me around. I'm gonna keep on a walking, keep on a talking, gonna build a brand new world. And there in Philippi, in the section that Mimi just read for us, we get a sense of what Paul is really confronting. We get a sense of what he is really confronting, because what happens is there is this slave girl who has the gift of what they called back then, she was a mantic. We might see her as a psychic today, that she had the ability to go into these trance-like moments. And in that trance-like moments, it's as if the gods would speak to her, speak through her, and she would tell people's fortune, tell the future and all of that. And she's going around with Paul and Silas and walking behind them and going, "These men are servants of the Most High God." She's speaking the truth. Paul's not happy hearing the truth. Why not? These men are servants of the Most High God, and yet Paul gets really irritated. Well, it probably makes sense because she, the mantics of the time, are associated as they go into this trance and speak for the gods. It's usually for Apollos. Paul doesn't want the truth coming from her mouth to be associated with the truth in his mouth because it's been already sort of dismayed by what people think of her. And so he says to her, in the tradition of Jesus, in the tradition of Peter, in all those that have gone before him, he says, "Get out, spirit." The spirit that has animated her and has given her the power to speak for the gods disappears. And now you would think, well, there it is. Just like Jesus did, a person is liberated from that which has held on to their very soul. And she is free to go, except for now we understand the real issue. Because the real issue is the people who own her, remember she is a slave girl, are all of a sudden no longer able to make money off of her, because she is no longer doing her thing for them because that spirit is gone. And they're not happy. What an interesting reality. The good news preached into this world has economic consequences for those who are in power and positions of wealth. And in a world that is, in fact, oriented around power and possession and position and profit, the good news actually has a whole lot to say about that that doesn't make those folks who are enjoying that power and profit all that happy. Think about it. There are a number of you right now who I know, when you go to buy clothes, you look at the labels on your clothing. You look at the labels on your clothing and you look to see where was that clothing made. You look to know where it was made because you want to know the hands that made it. You want to know, did it originate in a sweatshop that is an exploitative of not only the people making that clothing for you, but because of your faith, you also want to make sure that not only does it not exploit people, but exploit the planet as well. And so you look at your clothing. There are many of you who look at the devices we have in our pockets, that which hang up on our walls, those flat screens on our walls, and we think about how often are we going to replace them. Not whether we have the money to replace it, but how often. Knowing. Because we care for the folks that create them. We care for the planet that is a part of the production of it. We know as people of faith that these very devices can create exploitation for the people that make them. Can create, that is what happens when you have labor that has no power. And when they are ended, when they come to the end of their life cycle and they go into those landfills and those dumps, it doesn't just hurt the poor and the disenfranchised who live next door to them, but it hurts the planet. It hurts the air that we breathe. It hurts the streams. It hurts the ocean. It hurts all around us. And we know as people of faith, that we are called to think this way, to care for others by the way we spend our money. What an amazing reality Paul is finding out right there in Philippi, that in fact the proclamation of the good news has some economic impact on many people. If enough of us as people of faith were to call into question a reality of an economy, a worldwide economy that says selling weapons that will kill and destroy others cannot possibly be good in a gospel message that says that love should be unconditional, that says that when we love even our enemies, we should be willing to turn our cheek to walk the extra mile, that cannot be an economic system that is good for all, good for our nation. And Paul, in his very small way, as he sits there and he challenges these people who own her and take away their economic interests, is striking a blow for a gospel that has been struck for the next 2,000 years and needs to be struck louder and louder to make sure that we live in an economy that is lined up with the good news. Ain't gonna let power or position turn me around, turn me around, turn me around. Ain't gonna let your possessions turn me around. I'm gonna keep on a walking, keep on a talking, gonna build a brand new world. And so what happens to Paul? He gets hauled right before the authorities. The authorities take a look at him and listen to what these wealthy people who own the slave girl say. This Jew, well, there you have it. We've just made him another. Because this is a Roman colony in the middle of Greece, this Jew, he's not one of us. He's from out there. He doesn't know our ways. Is disturbing the status quo. Think back to the 1960s. Think back to 1963. Think back to Birmingham in 1963, to the racism, to the violence that emanated from out of that city. And in comes this person, Martin Luther King Jr., mobilizing the people to come together to challenge that racism, to challenge that violence with nonviolent direct action. And what is the challenges that are given to him? What do the people say? Primarily the white moderate pastors who say change will come eventually. Let's just take our time. They say, you're not one of us. You're from out there. Your people are not our people. You are coming in. You are causing trouble. You are disturbing the status quo. You're trying to move too fast. Your methodology is extreme, way too extreme. And Dr. Martin Luther King responds in the following way. He says, sorry, right here. Too extreme, you say? Was not Jesus an extremist for love? Love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you. Was not Amos, he says, an extremist for justice? Let justice roll down the waters, let righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. Was not Paul an extremist for the Christian gospel? I bear in my body the marks of the Lord Jesus, Paul says. Was not Martin Luther an extremist? For here I stand. I cannot do otherwise, so help me. So the question, Dr. Martin Luther King says, is not whether we will be extremists, but what kind of extremists will we be? Will we be extremists for hate or for love? Will we be extremists for the preservation of injustice or for the extension of justice? Dr. King wrote those words in a Birmingham jail. Paul, in proclamation of the very truth that animated the life of Dr. King almost 2,000 years later, finds himself in a similar situation. He is beaten, he is vilified, and he is thrown into jail. Not just thrown into jail, thrown into the deepest recesses of jail and chained to the walls. And there, so excited to do this with Angie. He sings, ain't gonna let injustice turn us around, turn us around. Turn us around. Ain't gonna let injustice turn us around. We're gonna keep on a walking, keep on a talking, gonna build a brand new world. You see, Dr. King took pen to paper and he wrote some of the words that I just read for you in the letter that we now know is the letter from a Birmingham jail. Paul took pen to paper at other times in which he was incarcerated, but this time he and Silas instead were singing. It was midnight and they were praying and they were singing, and you would think what happens next is the best thing imaginable. There is a massive earthquake. an earthquake so large that all the prison cells are burst open and everyone is free to go. If you ever want a get out of jail free card, this is it. And yet, Paul and Silas do not take that card. And why don't they take that card? Because as they are standing there in the rubble of the earthquake, along comes the jailer, the very man who threw them into the deepest recesses of the jail, the very man who chained them to the wall. And the jailer is aghast at what has happened and knows that his life is in trouble. And so in order to do something about it, he takes out a sword and he's about to kill himself. And Paul and Silas cry out. In the tradition of Moses, who could have gone up to that burning bush and said, never mind. And then instead of saying, never mind, takes that burning bush and goes back to where all the trouble is and goes back to Pharaoh and says, let my people go. In the tradition of a Jeremiah, who could have, when the Assyrians are coming into Israel and exiling people, just stayed in Jerusalem, but instead went with the exiles to Assyria, to Babylon, went there, and there while he was there, he said, you should be planting vineyards, you should be building houses. We are going to be here a while, but God will be here. In the tradition of Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego, who walked into that fiery furnace and knew that their Redeemer would come, in the tradition of Daniel in the lion's den, or John the Baptist, who could have easily just set up a retreat center right there by the River Jordan. But instead, they all turned to where the pain really was. And there's Paul turning to that pain of that jailer, the one who had thrown him into the jail. And he turns to the pain of that jailer and he says, I have good news for you. At his own risk, because that jailer could easily, if I jailed you once, I can jail you again. If I need to get out of a tight spot, I don't have to kill myself, I can kill you. At his own risk, Paul does this. He says, I have a message for you. It is a message of love. And he begins to tell him the good news. He begins to share with him the good news that I ain't gonna let anybody keep me from love. Keep me from love, keep me from love. I ain't gonna let anybody keep me from love. I'm gonna keep on a walking, keep on a talking. Gonna build a brand new world. Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around. Turn me around, turn me around. Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around. I'm gonna keep on a walking, keep on a talking. Gonna build a brand new world. Let's you all sing that. Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, turn me around. Turn me around, ain't gonna let nobody turn me around. Keep on a walking, keep on a talking. Gonna build a brand new world. One more time. Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, turn me around. Turn me around, ain't gonna let nobody turn me around. Keep on a walking, keep on a talking. Gonna build a brand new world. And so it is that we come to the table. If Paul's message was, ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, he was in good company, was he not? He was in good company because in many ways, is that not what Jesus was doing as well on that last night? I think it is entirely possible Jesus, knowing what was going to happen, could have said, around. I mean, we're in Jerusalem, but there are other places we could go. We could lay low for a while. We could maybe try to massage our message a little bit. We could maybe make it appeal to the crowds or appeal to those that are in power a bit more. we could maybe hold back just a little bit. You know that the disciples had probably been talking to him about that. Jesus, do you see how mad you're getting the people in power? Do you see what's going on? Couldn't we just slow it down just a little bit? Just like those moderate pastors were saying to Dr. King. And instead, Jesus says, ain't going to let nobody turn me around. I've got a mission. We are on a mission. We got things to do. Because if you are going to be a people of love, you're going to give your life in love for others. You are going to, as he said in the Gospel of John, no greater love do we have than that we lay down our love for one another, that we give of our love to one another. And so there at the Last Supper, unbeknownst to them, because I'm sure they were enjoying the wine just a little bit more than they might have, he is trying to make sure they truly understand the reality of life that is going to face them and all the generations that will make up the church for years to come. You will be a people. You will be a people of love. And in the process of being a people of love means that there are times that you are going to be broken. It is in the breaking that the love comes forth the most. There are times where you are going to make wrong. You will be forgiven. And in that forgiving, you will be able to move forward. And so on that last night, there with his disciples, he had gathered together and he took a loaf of bread and he broke it. He said, this is my body which is broken for you in the future. Do this in remembrance of me. And in the same way, he took a cup and he poured into that cup and he said, this is the blood of the new covenant which has been shed for you. Do this as well in the forgiveness of sins. And so it is that on that night they partook, maybe not quite fully understanding what they were doing, but it began to become known to them time and time again. Every time they broke bread, every time they drank the cup, every time they allowed themselves to be a people of love, every time they allowed themselves to be broken and to give life to others. So it is, like Paul, like those who went before Paul and those that followed, we are called to partake, to give of our lives as life has been given to us, to share with one another. So ministering in his name, I offer you this bread and the cup. I invite you all to come forward. For those who are wondering, the bread is indeed gluten and nut free, so we are good to go for many. Come, the table is set.